future-proofing your career in an uncertain economy. On today's show, Google weighs in on skills versus degrees. Brad shares with us how he is helping people future-proof their career by changing careers and the options that are available. Chris shares the massive action he's taken with the community. And Brad, well, he gets it done. And he's going to go behind the scenes and share how he's using one of his favorite tools, Todoist, and how you can too. Welcome to the Ultimate Crowdsource Personal Finance Show. This is your Friday Roundup.
You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
All right, guys, congratulations. You made it to the weekend. It's Friday. Brad, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, Jonathan, I am doing quite well. Yeah, I'm getting ready to go on my little Red X month here, as we talked about last week. So this is our last recording here for a while, which is exciting. It's been quite a journey. I know you spent, probably a couple hundred hours getting ready for your webinar last week, which is pretty wild.
And dude, we had over 1,000 people register for that webinar. You know, we have a podcast talking about personal finance. I didn't realize how many people that listen to our show talking about personal finance were actually interested in the behind the scenes, how we actually do this. The participation was insane.
Yeah, it's incredible. Really, truly incredible. And yeah, to your point, like we set this up at the beginning, people want to learn skills, right? We've been talking about that for so many years now. And this is another skill that you can pick up that just simply didn't exist. A decade ago? I mean, I'm not sure when the first podcast came out, but it probably wasn't much more than a decade ago in the grand scheme of things. And it's pretty cool. And I know I sent this in on a testimonial to you, but it's a pretty rare opportunity to be able to learn from the person who is quite literally the best in the world at it. Oh, wow. Right? Like that.
I'll take it. I mean, I'm not going to tell you you're wrong, but thank you.
You're quite welcome. And you know, I don't blow smoke. I think that is very, very legitimate. So yeah, it's just a huge thank you to you, obviously, from the whole community and from the larger community of people who are looking to learn these skills, right? It's not just personal finance people. It's people who are looking to learn something and start a podcast. Like that's one of the cool parts of the world now. It's like, think about what we did, right? From an office in the middle of a suburban house in Richmond, Virginia, we started this podcast with no prior experience. I was a CPA, you were a pharmacist, and we've turned it into something that has, in a lot of senses, made a dent in the world. And that's, it's just remarkable. It's a remarkable time we're living in that people can actually do that.
You know, I had notes, I had ideas about what we were going to talk about, and you have just set off a chain reaction, which just nuked everything I had written down. In fact, to the degree that like, I'm going to retitle the episode now, the gatekeepers are gone. Mm. Here's what I mean by that. When I was a kid and I'm trying to figure out what I want to do as a profession, occasionally I would have a couple individuals say to me, you've got a radio voice. Like you've got it. And I was like, what does that even mean? Like, what do you do with that useless little tidbit? Do I go apply it in PR? Do I go like ask somebody? Like I didn't take a radio class. Like, because there's gatekeepers. There's people that have to give you permission, have to give you access. And that just never made sense to me. I never did anything with it. It's as a compliment. And I was like, all right, great. I'll put that in the list of, you know, attributes that I don't know what to do with and will probably never do anything with it for like 20 plus years. I'm going to make a connection. I'm going to make a jump and then I'm going to come back to that thought. Simon Payne, who his name is probably not as familiar to our audience, but he is actually Alan Donegan's partner, co-founder of Pop-Up Business School, recently was quoted in an article. It was a UK large publication basically saying there has never all caps. Yeah, he used all caps. There has never been a better time to start a business. Well, Simon, that's crazy. This is the middle of a pandemic. Things are totally like out of control right now. The future is uncertain. And you're going to write in a big publication that there's never been a better time to start a business. I agree with his assessment. I think he's right. And hear me on this. The gatekeepers are gone. they don't exist anymore. Radio is dying. And all the institutions that we can think of where there was a gatekeeper and they made the decision about who got to create content, who got to act in certain roles, who got to be whatever, they are gone. The freedom of information, the ability for you to access knowledge on demand when you want it, and then create a business model around that, it has never been easier. When I look at what steps we had to go through to create a podcast in 2017 and compare that to how easy it is to do now, it's never been easier. And so what as a child or as an adolescent did you think you couldn't do because someone wouldn't give you permission? You didn't get accepted into school. You didn't get accepted in the program. Your grades weren't good enough. You applied for the job and they didn't give you a chance. You've just been told no, no, no. And then now in 2020, you realize you don't have to ask for permission anymore. You can just do it. It's there's never been a better time to start a business than here in 2020. And then it comes down to, well, what do you want to do? Brad, I'm going to give that back to you. Like, do you agree? Am I missing something? What has been your experience with this?
Yeah, it's a great point, Jonathan. It really is. I think to me, it's the gatekeepers. There's no them anymore. We've talked about this in terms of the FI community and what the rethink is when you're presented with this information. And it's a rethink in terms of your locus of control, as they say. This is a very specific term. And I had this too. It was this external locus of control that factors are impacting on me that are outside of my control. It's some them, right? And I think the rethink that happened for me 10 or 15 years ago, when I found this larger concept of self-improvement couched under FI, was it changed to, I have autonomy. I can impact my future. And I think just that psychological shift has changed everything for me personally. And I know for many, many hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people probably, who have found this concept, right? Because it was always, oh, I could never retire. Oh, that's impossible. They say you need X amount. They say, whether the they is Susie Orman or a retirement calculator or just somebody you heard talking in the office, they say you need $5 or $10 million to retire. They say it's based on your income. Well, I don't think those things anymore. I know it's based on my expenses. I have control over my expenses. I know there's a calculation to get to my retirement number. It's a rule of thumb, as we say, the 4% rule of thumb, but it gets me pretty darn close. And that is control that I have over my life now. It's not they anymore. To your point about the gatekeepers, somebody's not keeping me out. No matter what income I make, you know, within reason, obviously, I can reach FI. I can change. We talk about the equation, right? We talk about the income side, we talk about the expense side, and then we talk about that difference, that gap being invested. And, you know, we have talked about that over the many, many, many hundreds of episodes here of Choose a FI. We've talked about ways to optimize all three of those things. And again, the power is in your court. And I think that to me is the fundamentally transformational aspect of FI, is it's in your court. That internal locus of control changes everything.
Brad, that is so powerful. I mean, it speaks to me. I mean, there is no they. Who is this they? And I think as an individual, I always resented that there was. I always resented that there was an admissions office that would tell me that I'm not good enough, or that my SAT score wasn't as good as the next person, or that my GPA, this GPA that I had at some level, I needed to be 0.2 points higher or have done this much better on a standardized test. And then I would become one of the privileged few that could get into this institution and get whatever. Like, I resented that. I've always resented it. I did what I had to do to make sure the gatekeeper said yes, if I need to retake a test, if I need to learn this, but I've resented it since I was a child. And to look back now and as an adult and still resent it, not say, oh, I'm so glad the system bent me to its will and got me to, you know, do a little bit better and basically defer all the interest of learning. I resent it still to this day, and I want to break it apart. I want to do whatever I can to see it totally annihilated. That's where I am. Rant, right? I hear you, but that's how strongly I feel about it. We just described it from our two perspectives. This is every profession, every skill, every degree, every job has had a variant of this. And I think our audience would probably benefit from self-reflecting on who those gatekeepers are and is that still valid? But just to provide another example of this without having foreknowledge, I can just say MK, you are dyed in the wool in the publishing space now, right? Like writing is your life. And I think that writing and publishing has some gatekeepers. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about your perspective on this?
Oh, Nelly, the gatekeepers in traditional publishing, that's like trying to get out of Alcatraz, right? Trying to get into traditional publishing. I mean, there's so many hoops. There's so many huge walls to scale, you know, when you think about it. And what's so great is that with self-publishing, indie publishing, hybrid publishing, which is what ChooseFi does, it's democratized the voices that are getting out there, right? So like a book based on a podcast about personal finance, where you tell people to save, you know, try and aim for 50% of your savings, that might not have passed the barrier when we were looking to put this out, because it's like, well, there's a few other books coming out around that. So, you know, we're good. That's what the traditional publishers might have said, but we've sold tens and tens and tens and thousands of copies of this book. And that goes to show that like, there is no they. Like, the audience is now our they, who's saying, well, we demand more of this content you're putting out. And for me, I am so passionate about giving people that voice. And every aspiring author that I work with, every aspiring author who just reaches out to me, either through ChooseFi or Facebook or YouTube or wherever, and they say, I don't know, I'm thinking about this. And I'm like, you can do it. You can 1000% do it. And it's that feeling of imposter syndrome. It's almost like the they, right? Like the authorities and the gatekeepers have almost indoctrinated us with this imposter syndrome, and we're having to constantly undo it. And I love the support of this community, because every time I've hesitated, every time I thought, no, I couldn't, I don't know. I mean, I wrote a couple books, but I don't know if I could do nonfiction books now about self-publishing. People are like, of course you should. Of course you should do it. Like, get out there and do that. And every time I've talked to any of our authors that we've put out, and they're like, I don't know. I mean, do you really think? I'm like, yes, I do really think, you know, your blog is popular. So clearly people demand this content and they're going to want it in another format. Let's get this book out there. So I think it's nice to kind of be the person who's at the side of the fence with like the wire cutters and just like getting people in. It's like, yes, your voice is worthy. Get in there, get your message out to people. So yeah, for whatever industry or whatever artistic avenue you want to go down, right? I mean, writing is an art, and some people definitely view it that way, as it needs to be high and mighty and hoity-toity. But I think it's good that it is for everybody. So if you have a different venture and you need me to help you get those wire cutters to get that chain link fence open, to get around the gatekeepers, I'll help you. We'll figure it out.
It's amazing to think, you know, just the three of us on this podcast, what we've done in our lives in the last handful of years. And we are just perfectly normal, ordinary people, right? That's the wild thing, is because there are no gatekeepers, because there's no them, you can let interest-led learning lead you where it's going to. Think about, MK, what have you created? 8 books yourself? Is that the number?
Yeah, the 8th book's coming out September 15th.
Nice. Oh, that is incredible. So, right, you are a self-published author 8 times over. Jonathan, I think he'll humbly take this, but without hyperbole, is the best podcast producer and creator in the world, in my estimation. And I am, you know, the least of the three of us here. Like, I was a CPA doing corporate state tax returns for a baking company.
Oh, I never knew about the baking company part.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Some details here.
So, I mean, it's a, you know, massive company, but still for a baking company, right? It's corporate state tax returns in Richmond, Virginia. And I've had 3 successful online businesses, and now I'm the co-host of one of the biggest podcasts in the world. Like, that is crazy that the three of us even have opportunities to do that.
But play this out with the gatekeeper model, Brad, for you specifically, not someone else, just you. Like, this is what the old model looked like. You go to NPR or some other large radio organization and you say, I think it's in me to like do a podcast. Like, I have a voice. I have a lot that I want to say. I'd like to do a podcast. And they say, well, what's on your resume? Did you get a degree in communication? What are your references that would vouch for you? And then we also need you to go through a 3-person, you know, interview. And we have you talk to these different individuals and, you know, see if they like your personality, are going to mesh with what we're going to do. And like, or you could just get a microphone and start recording out of your living room and see if it resonates with people. That the old model or the new model? This is why in 2020, this is the best time to start a business in any industry, at any niche. It's just, it's amazing. And we're not alone now. Like, I know that we're just preaching this from the rooftop, saying, everybody start thinking this way. But Brad, I mean, I think you have an article listed here to mention that large tech organizations are catching up to us.
Yeah, and this is skills over degrees, right? Which is what we've been talking about here. And I mean, it's especially applicable, obviously, in the tech industry. But as we've discussed repeatedly, and just for the last 10 minutes, this is broadly applicable. And I think that's really critically important that everybody hear this, that this is not limited to tech by any means. But yeah, Google just a week ago or so announced 3 new online certificate programs in data analytics, project management, and user experience design, right? And these are critically important skills that you can now learn online and get the certification of Google, a company that didn't exist 20 years ago. You know, that certification, if you were an employer, considering how up to date that is, I think you would consider that more strongly than a degree from even Harvard or MIT if the person you were looking to hire is in these particular skill sets and niches, right? Like that to me is something that it just changes the game entirely. We talk about these gatekeepers. They are gone. This is broadly available. And it looks like that they committed funding 100,000 need-based scholarships for individuals enrolled in any of these certificate programs. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah. And Brad, to your point, you know, that company has the scholar, it has promised over $10 million in job training grants. It has, I believe, over 10,000 scholarships that it's offering for those tech skills that you just mentioned. And what is that certificate saying? It's saying that it certifies that someone has the skills. Look, that's the emphasis on the right thing. The emphasis is on the skills. The degree, it should mean the same thing. That was what was at its core, but it's become a bloated $100,000 version of the college experience and maybe the skills and the reputation of the college. We have lost our ever-loving ROI budgeting minds when we put all of our emphasis on the degree and not on the skills that we're learning. And we talked about it last week, so I'm not going to beat that up too much, but Tesla, Elon Musk has been famous for like leading the charge on this as well. And again, that's the tech industry, but I know it's outside of that. As the mainstream increasingly realizes that it's what have you done, you don't want to wait until after you've gotten the degree, after you've paid off all your student loan debt to start thinking about what have you done, especially when you can do it at no risk or low risk. Start building that talent stack early on. And what I would do at this point, because you don't need to have a very clear vision of exactly what you're going to do, I would start thinking about what am I interested in? You know, what you're interested in can be very expensive if it's all baked around $100,000 of student loan debt. That can be a financially complicated decision. But when you're talking about what can I learn for free or for low cost that I'm interested in and I can do in my, you know, my extra time, Brad, that dramatically changes the risk calculation.
Yeah, Jonathan, I agree completely. And a perfect example, actually, who we just got an update from is Bradley Rice, who we chatted with in episode 117. It was around the company Salesforce, which I guess he's a consultant for. And he had just a fascinating story at the time. And I'm curious to hear this update from MK. But he basically was working full time for a company and he wanted something different. You know, inspired by Phi, he wanted something different. And he actually pitched this idea of a 4-hour work day and what that would look like. And he made the case for him adding even more value and not wasting. He was actually going to be a consultant, so he wouldn't be on benefits and things like that. And he wouldn't be wasting hours, you know, at the water cooler or taking lunch or whatever. He would just work these really concerted 4 hours. And he went out of his way to add even more value than ever before. And now he's making more money than ever before. And that was the update from a couple of years ago. So MK, I'd love to hear what he's up to now.
Yeah. So Brad has been really busy, obviously, doing this consulting. And in the wake of COVID and everything going on, I think it coincided with him saying, hey, I can help people do this as well. And then COVID happened and so many people are now scrambling for maybe they had these full-time developer jobs with Salesforce and now they're out of a job. And he's going to help show people how to build their own freelance consulting. So he's building a course. He has a really active Facebook group as well. So he had reached out. He says, if you're already a Salesforce professional and maybe you're working in a W-2 position or you're ready to level up, that's who this course is for. but he has a really great Facebook group. And a lot of people who continue to listen to his episode 117 will reach out and say, hey, how can I find out more about this Salesforce thing? That sounds pretty cool. That sounds like a big deal. So he has a lot of great content he's putting out. We'll put links in the show notes. There's a few in here. He has a YouTube channel where you can learn a bit for free about what he talks about, as well as information about his course that he's going to be putting out. But he has a lot of great information out there for people who maybe you think, well, I don't want to be a podcaster, or I don't want to start an online course, or I don't want to be a writer, but I'm really good at this computer stuff. Which is how I would describe anything related to Salesforce, because I'm not tech savvy. Computer stuff. I'm really good at this computer stuff.
It's inside the computer. This might be an option for
you. Exactly. Yeah. So this might be a great option where you think, well, my boss won't let me do this, or this company won't hire me full time. This could be the way to get into a career where you're still using Salesforce, you're still using your skills, but as a consultant. And then suddenly the stress of, I need to get this full-time job is, oh, I finished my work at noon and now the rest of the day is mine, but I'm making more. So that would be a great option for everybody if that could happen. So check out Brad's update. We'll have links in the show notes so you can check out what he's doing, all of the content he's putting out to help people right now.
Now, MK, obviously we can bring Brad on for a segment at some point, but just for the audience so they can kind of get a sense, like when you say Salesforce, like, is this an MLM where you're like, you know, this is makeup and cosmetics or leggings? Like we said, it's a tech company. What what is Salesforce?
Yeah. So Salesforce is a customer relationship management tool, or CRM. And so what they do is they have multiple technologies. So if you think you're a big Fortune 500 company, right? So you have people who potentially want to buy your product. You need to keep track of that. Who is this customer? When was the last time we talked to them? Are they a prospect? Are they an actual signed customer? What's the package they signed on with? How am I going to market to them? How am I going to send them emails that are super customized? How am I going to keep track of all this information, right, about my customers, my customer relationship management tool? So all the information you think a company might need, B2B or B2C. It's like super niche, but these services that a company like Salesforce can offer to another large company is really helpful, because that company wants to focus on what they're good at, not on the customer relationship management and the database management. So for somebody who is a certified Salesforce consultant, you are effectively going into these large companies or companies that are looking to grow to help them implement Salesforce correctly. So this is obviously a very high cost product for a company, but it can have a lot of value. So you want to make sure it's implemented correctly. You're using it to its full extent. And that's what a Salesforce consultant like Brad would come in and do. And they would say, hey, here's how this works with your existing systems. Here's what you're not using from this tool that's going to solve for this problem that you have. So it's a very high touch service based thing that's being offered, and which is why it can be so lucrative, right? If I'm a company who's investing millions for the year to have this contract, to have all my contacts and database in Salesforce, I don't mind paying a couple thousand dollars here and there to have my consultant come in and make sure I'm using it properly. And so that's where this can be a lucrative option for people who understand the system. And that's why I think it's been so popular with people in our audience who maybe have experience. They're like, well, I've used Salesforce in my job, whether that's ExactTarget or some of their other products. It's definitely something that when you're in the big companies with the corporate lingo, you like to throw around.
So I'm as you're saying it now, I'm starting to visualize the skill stack. So you're in project management effectively. You have this tool, this database. A company has all this information that's not organized very well. What this job is not is, this is not you signing up to take phone calls with individual and help them troubleshoot why the product doesn't turn on. Have you tried unplugging it and plugging it back in? This is not customer service, it's customer relationships at a macro level. So you're taking a company with a tons of information that's not organized very well, and you're helping it use a world-class tool that streamlines and automates and create efficiency around that. And so it seems to me like the skill stack for this would be, one, you need to understand how to use Salesforce at the highest level. I mean, I'm sure there's like levels of this, like you get better and better, but you could probably start by watching free YouTube videos. And then you're just looking, what's the question that I didn't think to ask? So a course that provided for you 100 different questions, and then also the solutions to how to fix those. And then the next layer of this for the most successful Salesforce people would be the people, individuals that could then take this to a company and demonstrate the benefits. Here's what it does. Here's what you need. Here's what you're missing. Here's the value proposition of that. And then from there, now you're starting to build a network relationship. And I just wanted to point out, That's a certificate program. It's not a degree. So you can start that on your own time. You can do it from home. You can work remote. And then, Brad, I'm going to send this back to you to ask you this other question. I think you're like, this is, when you said lucrative, this isn't just $1,000 extra here or there. Do you remember what Brad was making, like on average, like what he quoted us once he moved to contracting and doing this?
Yeah, it's funny. I actually just looked this up on his YouTube channel, and it looks like he made $225,000 last year in 2019, working 20 hours a week. So, I mean,
I'm doing things wrong.
No, I mean, that is remarkable. And the reason why we're spending so much time here is because, like you said, a lot of people from our audience reached out to us after Brad came on the first time. I know a buddy of mine, Matt, who is a listener of the podcast, he's like, wow, that could be something I do to bridge my path and my gap to FI. So I'm quite literally sending him this in an email after we get off the recording here. And it's interesting that Brad, he learned this on his own. That was what was so cool from what I recollect about his story, is like, it was interest-led learning. He was always trying to pick up skills. During his lunch hour, he was taking courses. And that's the cool thing, is there are no gatekeepers anymore. Like someone like Brad, not only can he go from one job to then having this consultancy that makes 225 grand a year for 20 hours of work, that it's his company. If he wanted to work 40 hours, I'm sure he can make double that, right? Like he could make as much as he wants, essentially. But now somebody like that can teach other people around the world how to do this. That to me is the real takeaway from this, is that we all can expand our horizons beyond where we are right now. And I think that is an extraordinarily hopeful message, that no matter where you are, there are skills that abound. You can learn them and you can change your life in ways that you cannot possibly imagine today. And the three of us are perfect examples of this. Bradley Rice is another perfect example. And we've had countless other examples on this podcast and undoubtedly will in the future. And again, that to me is the most hopeful message possible.
And to add on to that, when you think about it, anybody who takes this initiative, who goes and learns this, gets a certification, starts their own business around this, that's a huge marketable asset should they ever want to enter traditional work later down the road. But they've also just said, I didn't need a gatekeeper to let me in. Like, I can just go sign up for these courses, get the certification. And oh, by the way, now that I've proved to myself I can do this, I can go pitch myself to larger companies because they have this option, or I can get certifications in other CRM systems and say, well, I can help you no matter what your needs are. So it just really opens up so many possibilities. And again, it's just thinking a little bit differently. You know, the four examples we've mentioned today, those are just four. And we've had so many other people come on the show who've talked about that. And I'm sure even more will reach out with their niche industries and how they've decided the gatekeeper doesn't matter. I'm going to figure this out and do this. So it's going to be exciting to see in the next couple months, the next year, how many more of these stories we hear and how many businesses are started and lives are truly changed because of this concept.
All right. I mean, talk about a massive win. If you just feel stuck right now and you say, you know what, maybe I just need to start building my talent stack. Maybe I need to start focusing on skills right now. What can I learn for free or for low cost? I like that. I like that question. Go figure out what it looks like for you. I want to start talking about what small actions transformed into massive wins actually looks like. And fortunately, we don't have to create it from scratch because Chris weighed in and he's made some huge actions over the last several months. Share that with us.
Yeah. So Chris wrote in on our Facebook page and shared some of the big changes that he and his wife have made. So Chris writes, following ChooseFi's advice a few years back, we have been maxing out my wife's employee stock purchase plan with the intention to sell her company stock once it reaches its maturity to qualify for the long-term capital gains taxing status. This enabled us to make a pretty sizable dent in her student loans the other day. A pending bonus from my job later this week will pay off the remainder of her student loan debt completely and our interest-bearing debt eradicated. Yay.
Wow.
This advice was especially close to me as my parents lost everything they had in the stock market by holding 100% of their retirement and my father's employer just before their scheduled retirement. This resulted in my parents teaching and convincing me that the stock market was bad and I should stay far, far away from it. I was literally taught to invest in gold and guns. Ooh. Fortunately, I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad early on and chose to focus on real estate. Since finding the ChooseFi community and learning the simple path to wealth a few years back, we diversified our portfolios to be about 50% real estate equity and 50% in the market. Special thank you to Brad, Jonathan, and the rest of the gang for all that they do. This is the first time in 20 years that I feel like we're winning the game. Wow. And he included screenshots of their Mint update, their Mint personal finance, not Mint cell phone, about their balances going to zero. So that's super exciting.
That is amazing. That is absolutely, that's so much fun. And actually, just for our audience, with regards to the ESPP, the employee stock purchase program, it's actually an extra perk that you potentially have with your employer right now, where they'll give you basically a subsidized price on your stock purchase if you purchase their company. And the thing about that, that Chris was mentioning, is we like that. We'll take free money. We'll take subsidized stock options, but we already have a lot invested in our company. We already have our jobs are at stake inside of our company. So what you typically would want to do is take a look at when that vests, or when you can then take it out of that account without any sort of penalty or without paying higher taxes than necessary, and get it into something more diversified. So when I worked for my corporate pharmacy, they offered this. And when I took advantage of it, as soon as I was allowed, I'm going to try to move it out and get it into something more diversified. And you might have to do that a couple times a year, but this can be hugely profitable. We did a deep dive. I believe we did a deep dive on it. Brad, I know you don't remember, but this is way, way back in the day. It was so far back that I had to look up the episode number, episode 24R. So chooseify.com/024R. We did a bit in that Friday roundup on how to optimize the ESPP. But I mean, huge props to Chris for tackling this and using it to get so much traction on their student loans. And how about them staying out of the stock market because of that experience with their parents, Brad?
Yeah, this is quite a story, right? Like where he's saying the first time in 20 years that I feel like we are winning the game. That in and of itself, that tells the whole story, right? Like we feel like we are winning the game. And sure, my parents had this catastrophic scenario, and sure, they taught us to be scared of it, but I'm now learning and I'm moving forward and I'm making changes and I'm trying to make my life better. And yeah, I mean, I think it's just incredible. And you never know. They diversified to real estate and the market. People do things differently, but it's all based on this knowledge that you pick up. This is a whole worldview of I'm trying to learn new things. And I'm trying to, no matter where I've been, no matter what mistakes I've made, no matter what mistakes my parents might have made and tried to indoctrinate us with, like, I can move forward. Again, I keep using this word, but hopeful. That is where we're going with this, is you're never stuck. You're just never stuck. You can always learn and you can always be better, just a little bit better the next day and every day thereafter.
And Brad, you know, as we're talking about ESPP, because the part about that is it's not a frictionless, painless thing to transfer money out of your employee stock purchase program. It actually requires that you remind yourself, because you can't, this isn't a one and done thing. This is a, your company allows you to invest this amount. You have to keep it in account this long. And then you have to trigger this transfer at this point in time. There's multiple points of forcing this action. And while it's not necessarily hard to do each one of those steps, it's annoying. And so you actually got a question. MK, why don't you set Brad up for that question? And then Brad, maybe you could tackle it in the context of both the ESPP, but also generally what you do for your life.
Yeah. So Josh wrote in and said, in several episodes, you've mentioned using Todoist to keep track of so many recurring things in your life and likely all of the 5 checklist items to tune up your finances throughout the year. Because of you, I've been a diligent user of Todoist for about the past year and have my own recurring personal finance checklist items built out. But think it would be awesome for you to publish what your Todoist looks like and how you use it to keep your life in order. What do you think? So Brad, are you willing to open up, to unlock your phone for us?
Please just say, let's get it done.
Into the organized mind of your Todoist.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, I will, I'll take the challenge. And Josh, thank you for writing in. So yeah, I mean, this might not be perfect exactly on a podcast, but I'll just give a sense of like how I approach this. So I've talked before probably 30 times about how I love Todoist. So it's Todoist.com. And this is something I personally have just been using for years. And I basically have outsourced all of the tasks in my entire life into Todoist. So whenever something comes up, like I need to trust this thing 100%. I think that's the critical aspect of this, is that it's not just, oh, it's somewhat reliable. Like I have made a concerted effort that whenever any type of recurring task, or obviously if it's just a one-off for in the next couple of weeks, I put it in there as well. But most important are the recurring tasks. And I've put them all in there. So, I mean, I'm talking, I have, and I'm going through the list here. I've got every month on the 15th of the month, I put in a new pair of contact lenses. I literally have replaced the air filters in my house. I think it's every 2 months. It might be every 3 months.
You're going to exaggerate it down. You're going to stretch the truth on this one because you don't want us to actually know.
Okay.
He's a six monther. I can tell people calling him out. Those ain't those 4-inch media filters. He's got the rock catchers in his house.
Oh, it is 2 months. Jonathan, oh, nice. I just clicked on it.
And is it overdue?
It is not overdue. I actually just changed them this week. All right. Which is so interesting. I stand corrected.
I apologize, people.
It was July 19th and it just updated to September 19th and the following one, you know, November 19th, et cetera. I mean, I literally have down to our car inspections are every year at the end of whatever month it is, let's say February. So on February, I made a recurring task February 1st of every year, get this car inspected. And then whatever the other one is, March 1st of every year, down to my passports, something that expires every 10 years. I put, you know, renew passports this date. Because again, I am trusting this thing 100%. Anything I need to think of, like I used to be that person who was, and like most of us, walking around with your head just swimming of all these things to remember, or you'd jot it down on a sheet of paper and hope that you'd remember, right? Like now I don't do that. Like I prepaid our garbage. So we have a private company that collects our garbage here, and I prepaid for a year. So that date when I prepaid, I then put in for basically 11 and a half months in the future, pay county waste. You know, I have a little note in there with their phone number and my account number. So I don't need to do anything. I just call up. I wrote down even how much I paid per month. So I have that. I don't need to reinvent the wheel, right? I don't need to find my credit card bill and find the old invoice. Like it's just done. Like Jonathan, I've got call Verizon to see if there's a better deal coming on August 1st, because my contract ends in the middle of August. I have like a 1-year contract. Cancel an app that I got. I got the Calm meditation app for free using an American Express credit card. And I literally put in here, I get it for 1 year for free. So 11 and a half months from that date that I signed up, I put in that recurring task. And, you know, Josh asked about FI items. I have in here, if you use annualcreditreport.com, you get a free credit report from each of the three bureaus. So what I do is every 4 months, I have a different recurring task for get one from Experian, get one from TransUnion, et cetera. And that's just in there. I do my quarterly financial statements. It's do quarter one financial statements on April 1st. And that's a recurring task every April 1st. I have do quarter two on July 1st, et cetera. So, I mean, does that give you a kind of a sense of how I mentally approach this?
It's awesome, dude. Yeah, I think that's the key. If you decide to use something like this, there's two approaches. There's one, for this week, have kind of a crazy week. So let me just put a couple things that I need to do in here to make sure I nail it. That's one. Two is I'm going to offload my brain into this. Anything in the middle will just kind of leave you a little bit frustrated. And you just will end up not wanting to use it 3 or 4 months because you can't trust it. You don't know if it really, you've kind of leaned in, but you haven't really leaned in. And you don't check it every day. So things are lagging. And like I right now have on mine, because I'm in the middle here. I have on mine, send a copy of my will to the lawyer that helped, you know, Matt, who helped us set up our estate plan. I don't know if I did that. And it's like 3 months overdue. Like I can't trust it, right? So like you just need to assume you can't trust it and you do everything. You kind of need to pick either one, need to do it for this week's kind of crazy. I got a lot, just get it off my brain real quick. So I know this is what I need to get do, or two, completely offload my brain and trust that if it's not on here, it doesn't exist. And that is, Brad, where you are. And I can tell you, like, I know that me being somewhere in the middle isn't great. And as my life gets busier, and I don't mean that in the pejorative sense, I just mean it, stuff's slipping. Right? Like I got a lot going on and I'm just finding that I'm always reacting to events. I'm not proactively attacking the day. I need to like sharpen up and get that done. I was teasing you about your air filter. That's in Todoist. It says it's 3 months overdue right now. I think I changed it though, but see, I didn't update it. So you gotta be able to trust it. You gotta lean in. So I like it. I'm on it. I'm gonna go back and get this thing uploaded. But I think that's the other thing. The more time you invest on the front end, the more you actually believe you can trust it, the more likely you are to actually follow through with this. In 3 or 4 or 5 months, you realize, all right, the day started, I have 5 tasks on my list. I'm gonna knock those out. And then I can trust that the rest of the week will follow. So yeah, I need to lean back into that. All right, Brad. Well, we're going to start wrapping up this episode, but I just wanted to, for our audience, as we're going into the weekend here, I know we said we're about to go on this Red X month. That is true, but it actually will not affect our audience's listening experience because we didn't just plan on a Red X month. We planned on a Red X month, meaning we have been creating some amazing, like truly mind-blowingly amazing episodes for you guys, including the Households of Five. Brad, tell them what's coming up.
Yeah, Jonathan, I could not agree more. This is going to be an incredible couple months, and it really kicks off next week. So this coming Monday, August 3rd, we have Tiffany Alice, the Budgetnista. And Jonathan, I know you and I, to say we were blown away by her and her story and what she's built, that would be the biggest understatement in the world.
I got chills right now, dude. She is a freaking rock star. She said she got her brand name, the Budgetnista. She said her sister was throwing some shade at her. She said, "You're not a fashionista, but you sure are a budgetnista." I was like, "Oh, that's epic. I see what you did with that. I see what you did with that shade. Just turn that right around. Own it."
Yeah, own it indeed. And that was an epic, epic episode. So I implore every single person to please listen to that. That is just an amazing episode. And then starting next Friday, so August the 7th, episode 241 is our first of the deep dives with the 8 Households of Phi. So we're kicking off 8 successive Fridays. We're going to have a deep dive with each of those households. And Jonathan, we've brought in a lot of our in-house experts here from the Choose a Phi community. I know I did a couple of these episodes and we just dove deep. That first touch point, that's the beautiful thing of these Households of Phi, is that this is a journey. These are 8 different households who have just found the Phi community this year, 2020. What a unique opportunity to see where they've been, where they are now, and to help them get to where they're going. So these next 8 Fridays are just going to be so much fun as the true introduction. Sure, earlier on episode 221 and 224, we had the little snippet, the whet your appetite introduction. But man, these are the deep dives. And this is, as we see it, this is a large part of the future of the Choose a Phi podcast is following these households and seeing where they go. And all the people out there that can relate to their stories are going to follow so closely. So yeah, I mean, you talked about chills with Tiffany, which I shared. This to me is just such an exciting, exciting thing. And yeah, just super excited for next week.
To our audience, as we roll into August, I want you to think about what it would look like for you to get started on your path to financial independence. You know, maybe you've been sitting on the sidelines, maybe you've been enjoying the information, you've gotten a tidbit there, and you've done just a couple things, but you know, at some point you want to dial it up a notch. Here's my challenge to you. It's actually, I don't want you to do anything this week. It's the opposite of that. I want you to think about September 1st, this fall, as being your kickoff, where you take on a challenge and you go through a 6 to 8 week transformation to get started on your path to financial independence. And in the meantime, I want you to think about maybe 2 to 5, you know, just a small group of people that you might do it with that you know could benefit. Maybe it's family members, maybe it's friends in your community. I want you to think about how can we be the change we want to see in the world? And how can we make our own lives better? With that in mind, I want to encourage you to have everyone that you're interested in doing this, go to choosefi.com/FI101. It is our completely free. The price is important here. It's priceless. This information is priceless because it helps you reclaim your freedom, but it's free. I want you to find just a small group of people that you want to do this with. And I want all of you to register to start together. Don't go in ahead of time. Start together on September 1st. In the meantime, just get hyped, get prepared, come up with your action list, get in the mindset. But September 1st is your first day of the rest of your life. And Phi101 is the resource that you're going to use and you're going to hold each other accountable. MK, I know you shared this just a couple weeks ago, but we took a study, some data from the individuals that had gone through this course. The average participant by the end of that course was saving an additional, had created an additional $400 plus a month of savings after having gone through this course. That's how powerful this is for you to take action on this. And so if you're saying, you know, I felt kind of stuck, I want that freedom, I want that sense of accomplishment, I want what Chris was describing, and I'm willing to take small action, then I want you to find those five participants and all of you go to chooseify.com/FI101, sign up, and don't do it today. Don't do it. Don't get started early. Just hold back. You're going to start on September 1st. All right, my friends, this is what the fire spreading looks like. This is it. This is it. The fire is spreading. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
You've been listening to Choose FI Radio Podcast, where we help middle-class America build wealth one life hack at a time.